We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This podcast is, of course, as always, made possible by a generous grant. This time, our generous grant comes from large corporations building a large file on you that is larger than the CIA had on John Lennon in the 60s. It's quite a mouthful, but a very important sponsor. That's right. Why should intelligence agencies have all the fun? For years, corporations have been quietly collecting information about you. What you buy, when you buy it, how often you buy it. That's right. Why should intelligence agencies have all the fun? Our generous sponsor believes that you deserve to be understood, not as a person, but as a data point. With a preferred dipping sauce, if we can find that out. And we will. Here at Corporate Surveillance, we believe every purchase tells a story. That's why we're committed to preserving your legacy, one cheeseburger at a time, in a data center built in a small town that we care nothing about. It is extremely important to us. Our archive already knows your favorite dipping sauce, your emotional support order after 11 p.m., and exactly how many times you've said, "I'll just get something small this time," and then ended up changing your mind. You know, historians used to use diaries in order to understand history. Well, now they are outdone by a burger company and a simple rewards account. Large corporations building a larger file on you than the CIA had on John Lennon. Remember, you've got nothing to hide, because we've already monetized it. But as thankful as we are for large corporations building a larger file on you than the CIA had on John Lennon in the 60s for their support, and we really, truly do appreciate it. If I'm honest, this podcast is only possible due to the generous support of loyal viewers / listeners, depending on your medium of choice, like you. You continue to make all of this possible over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff, where you can become a patron of the bullshit arts at a level that fits your budget. And we've accounted for the macroest of macro budgets, because I know that you're looking for the cheapest possible entertainment that you can get. And this way, you can support the arts that you prefer, not the arts of some random family who has their name on a wall of an arts centre somewhere. Become a patron of the bullshit arts. Go to patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. But of course, my friends, of course, I think you already know that really none of this would be possible nor necessary without my live shows to underpin it all as the skeleton that keeps it all going. And I will be heading out very soon to the Sydney Fringe from September 15th to 19th. I'll be at the Erskineville Town Hall in the Emerging Artists Share House in a space called The Spare Room, doing my storytelling and stand-up show, Jokes, about the time that I got detained in America and other stories. And I'll be continuing that tour by taking it to the Melbourne Fringe. Two venues in the Melbourne Fringe. Two venues, very important that you know that. From the 5th till the 11th at the Motley Warehouse, which is just near the Queen Vic Market, if you're not sure where that is, because I certainly got lost trying to find it the first time. And then over at Transcendence, which is in Collingwood, from the 15th of October until the 18th of October. One of them is at 6 o'clock, one of them is at 9 o'clock. Go on the website, and you'll be able to see all that you can see. And then I'll be getting over to the Geelong Comedy Festival, single show only, on October 23rd at the Geelong Club downstairs. All of those, of course, as I've already said, are renditions of my new storytelling and stand-up show, Jokes About the Time That I Got Detained in America and Other Stories, a show that I will be looking to tour extensively in 2027. So come check it out early, or if you don't have time to do it then, come next year and come suss it all out. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's get into the headlines. From February 2nd, 2027, all Jetstar domestic and international economy flights will be limited to one underseat bag, such as a backpack, handbag, or laptop bag. And they will charge you to stow carry-on luggage in the overhead locker. They will also start referring to passengers as money piñatas to more accurately represent their ongoing relationship. Look, I shouldn't be surprised by this. Realistically, I shouldn't. Airlines are so bad at the moment. Things are so bad that genuinely, there is a couple of airlines that are getting sued for selling window seats that don't have windows. Guys, it's in the name, you fucks. That's like ordering a prime minister and getting Scott Morrison. Sure, that's technically what you ordered, but it is not fit for purpose. I'm just calling it here now for all of you wonderful listeners. Before we know it, airlines will start charging a fee to ensure that a seat exists, access fees for the toilet, an hourly fee for the privilege of breathing oxygen, and then a premium for the kind of oxygen that isn't deadly. And if you, my friends, if you hear any of these things being put in place, no, it is because I sold them to the airlines, guys. It's a cost of living crisis, and we've all got to get paid. The Council of Europe urged FIFA to strengthen the integrity of football, saying that the World Cup co-hosted by the United States had been tainted by political pressure, racist abuse of players, and the opening up to betting markets, which paves the way to fraud. That's right. The organization that earns so much money from corruption, the World Cup is its actual side hustle, has been accused of undermining the integrity of football. That story again. FIFA, the organization responsible for bribery scandals, sports washing, human rights violations, exploitative ticket pricing, and making every World Cup host ask, just how many labor laws will people allow us to ignore in order to get this done, has been accused of weakening football's integrity. I don't know where you'd get that idea. It's not like their unofficial motto is, you know what, if enough money is involved, we'll consider it. US President Donald Trump says it would be a terrible mistake if, under pressure, FIFA President Gianni Infantino was ousted from his position. Of course, fearing Infantino's removal could set a precedent for corrupt leaders the world over to face consequences for their actions. Going on to say that corruption shouldn't become a career-limiting issue, and FIFA must stand firm against radical ideas like accountability. Andy Burnham says he's accelerating government plans to make it easier to cancel subscriptions as part of his aim to introduce everyday fixes to bring down the cost of living, with a bold strategy of helping Britons to stop paying for things that they don't use. This comes after Britons were shocked to discover that 90% of the modern economy actually consists entirely of renting things that they used to own. People are, of course, excited that this might make gym memberships easier to cancel, meaning gyms will have to return to their first terrible business model, relying on people who genuinely want to exercise and then getting them to actually show up. The European Union has fined AliExpress close to $900 million for failing to remove counterfeit and illegal products quickly enough, which is terrible news for the three people who thought they were buying a 100% genuine Rolex-style timepiece for only $4.99. On the plus side, all the fake goods now have been replaced with slightly different fake goods. Shopping on AliExpress is a unique customer experience. It's much like buying sushi from a petrol station. You're never going to ask, ooh, is this genuine? You know that you're taking a risk. It's built into the model. The exciting part is actually finding out how much of a risk you're taking. Is it an afternoon on the toilet bowl level of risk, or are we talking a full week in the emergency room level of risk? Let's find out. An Australian woman has given birth to identical quadruplets in a neonatal unit in Brisbane in a birth that doctors are describing as extraordinarily rare and that the parents are describing as the end of the parents ever sleeping at the same time ever again. The good news is that the four girls are doing well. The bad news is Christmas is now a hostile financial event. To add to the confusion, they actually named the kids the most Australian names that I have ever heard. There's Yeah, Nah, Nah Yeah, and Yeah Nah Yeah. EasyJet has launched a new luggage collection service. Travellers flying with the airline through Edinburgh Airport will now be able to check in their luggage from home, allowing Scottish travellers the unique ability to replicate the inevitable experience of losing their luggage all from the comfort of home. Next year, EasyJet hopes to introduce home security screening, followed by remote duty-free shopping, and eventually the revolutionary concept of paying them to simply stay where you are. Donald Trump's longtime teleprompter operator is believed to have made tens of thousands of dollars by placing bets on more than a dozen of Trump's speeches on prediction market websites. The teleprompter operator allegedly beat the prediction markets by using America's one weakness, being able to read. It might not sound like something that needs investigating given the obvious corruption of the entire Trump administration, but anyone who is saying that betting on the predictability of Trump saying any word at all ever, even if it's already in the teleprompter, is actually the riskiest gambler who has ever gambled. Apparently the only person who is allowed to make money grifting in Trump's America is Trump himself. Probably the teleprompter should have just cut the big man in on the grift and then they'd still be sitting pretty today. The Royal Shakespeare Company has launched the first Game of Thrones stage spin-off. Given Shakespeare has had no new work for 400 years, seems the RSC might actually be the one organisation patient enough to wait out George R.R. Martin to finish his actual books. I mean, at this rate, we'll have until 2426 before they decide that they need to adapt something new. Israel has rejected a peace plan for Gaza that President Trump announced last month, saying that they don't want to be unreasonable, but they won't withdraw from the territory until Hamas makes a few concessions, like giving up all its weapons, its land, all Gazan citizens move out of the country forever. You know, simple little things. After advice from Health Secretary RFK Jr., Trump has signed an executive order that calls for a reduction in the number of vaccines that American children are routinely given. They have said not to worry, as children will get all the protections that they need from their new HHS food pyramid, which says children should eat 6 to 11 servings of food scraped off the road or at least found on the side of a path, 3 to 5 servings of insects and snakes, 2 to 4 servings of decapitated whale's heads, 2 to 3 servings of either animal penis or brain worm, and 8 glasses of raw milk extracted directly from the cow. That should sort them out. AI videos of fruits and vegetables committing gory acts and violence are spreading extremist agendas on TikTok and have radicalizing potential for young people. Experts say that the videos risk turning children everywhere into some form of banana republican army. Although I'd say that there's a bigger risk of these brain rot videos turning them into vegetables rather than Fruit Loops. Precautionary measures have been put in place, but the highest threat level has now been upgraded from red to carrot. And UK counter-terror police rushed to add Lebanese cucumbers to the list of known terror groups, despite them actually not being involved in the incident. Even the Wiggles have been banned from entering the UK, as their song Fruit Salad Yummy Yummy was thought to be some kind of coded call to arms. But it's just evidence that not all fruit-based videos are causing problems. It's just a few bad apples. And that, my friends, is the end of the headlines. We're moving on now to the biggest story, starting with Alert News. The nexus of government and technology has collided once again to bring us both Oz Alert, the new emergency warning system that debuted on July 27th, along with its brand new crop of conspiracy theories about the Oz Alert test. How fun! That's right, it seems that we can't have any new technology these days without a slew of conspiracies arriving before the tech has even dropped. But that's just the speed of modern life, I guess. Before a thing exists, we form a defensive position against it, because when something stupid inevitably happens, then you can loudly proclaim, "I was right to be against this thing all along," and look like a genius. Before we get into this, if you don't know what Oz Alert is, or if you somehow managed to be in a coma for the 10 seconds that it was tested, the Oz Alert system works by broadcasting a 10-second siren and a message to compatible phone devices, including mobile phones, some smartwatches, and tablets. And that's it. That's the whole thing. I will say, though, that the quality of the conspiracy theories that are circling around the Oz Alert system are, I will say, pretty fucking lazy. Not even slightly creative, if I'm being honest with you. You know, the exact kind of boring thing that you would expect from a modern-day conspiracy theory, just disappointing slop. For starters, some people have been discussing whether the government is using the system to secretly track them, which is just a staggering level of cognitive dissonance. Oh no, the government is using emergency alert systems to track them through the phone tower that's triangulating the GPS satellite, accessing the Wi-Fi positioning, Bluetooth beacon searching and receiving IMSI, that's fake phone towers in case you're not familiar with that lingo like I wasn't, catching, operating system using, app permission allowing, ad pixel ID and cookie receiving, metadata creating, biometric storing and sharing smartphone. How will we ever overcome this dramatic overreach from the government? I won't even be able to hide in the woods jacking it to porn in the bunker if the government can use these alerts to track me. At least the corporations who provided me with the tracking device that I willingly use gave me something in exchange for it. Porn that I could jerk in a bunker. There has never been a device that makes it easier for you to be tracked than a smartphone with the internet. And the government didn't force you to buy them. We did that to ourselves, guys. Before I had a smartphone, I will say this is a personal story. Before I had a smartphone, I was once yelled at by a bus driver for daring to ask for directions. I asked him if he knew the directions of a particular street that was sort of quite close by, near the bus stop. He picked up his smartphone and he just stared down at me and he said, "You see this? This got me through the jungles of Vietnam without getting lost. Get one." And then just refused to give me directions to the street that I was asking about, which felt like a long-winded way of saying, "Nah, I don't know." But it worked. I tell you, it worked. I got one not long after. And now I never have to ask a bus driver for basic directions or kindness or anything. I mean, you could probably guess the other kind of conspiracy theories that they were coming up with. We'll say them together because you're a clever audience. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1. Wrap your phones in tinfoil and put it in the microwave to stop the messages from arriving. Did you get it? Did you get it? I'm pretty sure you nailed it. You must have. You're a clever audience. Good work, guys. Good work. I know. I believe that you nailed that one. It's a pretty pedestrian, and as far as anti-tech conspiracy theories goes, it's very, very simple. Tinfoil, we love a good tinfoil. The microwave, we love a good microwave. And sure, all you have to do is either turn your phone off or put it into airplane mode in order to avoid the alert. But hey, there are already a bunch of people who don't think that airplane mode works. So this is sort of a weird position for conspiracy theorists to be in the first place. Which one do you believe? Which one are you more afraid of? You know? Either they demonstrate to themselves that airplane mode does indeed work and that maybe they should turn it on when they get on a plane, or they allow themselves to be targeted by the government's latest spying attempt. You're stuck between a government in a safety compliant place. Oh, what's a conspiracy theorist to do? You notice that these anti-tech related conspiracy theories always turn to tinfoil as a cheap and fun DIY Faraday cage. Like if Play School had a Doomsday Prepper special, you know? Despite literal tinfoil being widely replaced by cheaper aluminium foil after World War II. Also, the classic tinfoil hat of fashion and paranoia circles, which is a partially open dome, so it wouldn't even shield you from radiation. It's, I don't know, what a weird choice to make. In fact, a famous 2005 study by MIT showed that makeshift foil headwear can actually amplify certain radio frequencies. So have fun with that one, conspiracy theorists. Those are the frequencies that big tinfoil are projecting their secret messages on. And all it says is, they're coming for you, they're coming for you, buy more foil, buy more foil, buy more foil. But they get in, they emphasize in your brain. It's a vicious cycle. This is, I will say, a lot of effort to avoid a service that, realistically, if you want to be disconnected from, you can simply turn your phone off. But if you want to microwave your tinfoil wrapped phone in order to avoid a 10-second alert, more power to you. If it does make you feel better, people have been working hard to mod their phones with different types of modes that you can put your phone in to avoid the alert. Options that I have managed to track down are, I live with an abusive cunt mode, I'm a secret drug dealer mode, napping mode, refusal to move to the times mode, and of course, political activist attending a protest mode. Now, I will grant you all of these are actually just airplane mode, but hey, whatever makes you feel more comfortable, we're here for you. I do sort of see where these people are coming from. The major parties have never really taken an interest in ensuring our safety before, and now suddenly they're rolling out an alert system to try and keep us safe. This is why you need to have a few positive policies sprinkled throughout the rest of the atrocious ones that you constantly pump through. Because we can't go from zero to, oh yeah, we're looking out for you, we always have been. People will start to get suspicious. The system was made after the Black Summer bushfires, when governments weren't able to get messages to people. It serves as a means of avoiding action on climate change for at least another decade, because now, when the inevitable rise in natural disasters due to inaction on climate change catches up with the population, we have a way of telling them that disaster is coming. However, this, like the 30 years of climate science warnings of the inevitability of climate disaster, will also diligently be ignored until it's too late. That's the Australian way. When I wrote that originally, I was sort of like half joking, but I'll tell you this, immediately after the AusAlert system was proven mostly successful, like it got out to majority of phones, Queensland, our country's most volatile state, both meteorologically and electorally, has decided that despite literally being the country's most naturally disaster-prone state, Fire and Disaster Recovery Minister Anne Lee said the state will not be using the AusAlert system, choosing instead to raw dog natural disasters in true Queenslander style. They have instead implemented the statewide declaration of, yeah, nah, she'll be right, mate. You'll get one of those sent to your phone via text message or into a group chat of some kind. Yeah, nah, she'll be right, mate. And then we'll elevate those levels to, like, from yeah, nah, she'll be right to nah, yeah, probably fucked. Those are the two alert levels. It's a bold move from a state whose weather forecast regularly includes the phrases life-threatening and once-in-a-lifetime, and routinely arrives with its own name. The government, however, does want people to know that the former early warning system of seeing your wheelie bin rise higher than your house does actually remain in place. Moving on now to animal news. Clones! Science fiction's favourite gotcha story device. And the future of delicious meats, if I'm to understand science. Scientists have been testing the limits of cloning ever since Dolly the Sheep came into the world in the 90s, sparking dreams of infinite meat production lines for the rest of time. But science has come to burst your infinite meat dreams by telling us that mammal cloning cannot be endless, which is disheartening at best. Sorry, guys, but the Michael Keaton science fiction magnum opus Multiplicity is the truest science fiction film of all time, although it only took four generations of Keaton clones to start breaking down, which makes me wonder if there is more to the Michael Keaton story that we aren't aware of. Because the degeneration isn't supposed to kick in until around the 25th generation of mice, and then finally fall apart at generation 58, which gives us 28 generations of slowly declining in quality mice until they finally give up altogether and refuse to be bred in this sexless manner anymore. And quite frankly, I don't blame them. Now, I'm not sure that this science needed to be done. We've had almost 1,000 years of royal inbreeding, cousin marrying, and bloodline preserving before the Habsburg chin started appearing. It only took 9 generations to get that sign of inbreeding degradation to rear its literal ugly head. If the royal families have been good for nothing else, and let's face it, they haven't, they have served as a living cautionary tale for the remainder of humanity. No matter how much you like your cousin, it's not worth the purity of the bloodline. Mammals need variation. This is simultaneously devastating for science and a relief for the planet as a whole, really, as it means that it'll be impossible for millionaires, billionaires, or trillionaires to recreate themselves over and over and over again for as long as it takes to use up the vast amount of wealth that they hoarded like cunty dragons during their lifetime. Long-time listeners might remember multi-millionaire and man turning his teenage son into a $2 million blood bag in order to defy aging, Brian Johnson. And that Rupert Murdoch is currently 96 years old and should know that this gap in the ability of science to make this go on forever makes me very happy. These monsters might be unlimited in power and influence in their lifetime, but it brings me all the joy in the world to know that they are limited in how long that they can potentially exist. Even though, and I will admit this is a problem, all the damage can be undone by one generation, even like the 57th generation, simply having sex with another person, that does seem increasingly unlikely for incel introverted billionaires like Elon Musk, who are forced to pay people to take samples of their sperm due to the repugnant nature of their personality. It's just pleasing that all the money in the world can't buy immortality. So maybe they'll finally stop trying to fucking collect it all and live a life of a reclusive millionaire away from the rest of society, like Howard Hughes or Dracula. They can spend some of that money on philanthropic causes like helping the needy, or making it so that Californian researchers don't have to turn to OnlyFans in order to raise the necessary money to oversee one of the longest running studies of free living mammals in the world, one that's focused on yellow-bellied marmots. After the Trump administration cancelled billions of dollars in research grants just last year, derailing work focused on diversity, climate change, and other hot-button topics like, woke or some shit. Apparently de-workifying science or some such nonsensical bullshit was a high priority. It's hard to keep up with all of the shovelfuls of shit that he's been throwing around these days. Forcing these good-hearted science people to turn to the notorious site for fans to start telling their significant others, no, babe, I swear, I'm only subscribed to the mammals, which isn't the defense that they think it is. Think about it. Every animal on there is a mammal. Once this headline appeared, ooh, bad boyfriends everywhere were thinking, finally, an excuse they can't deny. And they used that perverty voice even in their own head. For all you listeners saying, oh, why not start a GoFundMe instead of an OnlyFans, as they are embarrassed to start up an OnlyFans account in order to support them, I say, do you know nothing? GoFundMe is a replacement for healthcare, not science. Science has no place on GoFundMe. Outrageous. It's like you know nothing about the world at all. I believe this is what OnlyFans was sort of actually intended to be. Well, like, not for getting your research funded, but that's just a byproduct of terrible politics. But actually to, like, connect fans with artists and performers and you know, well-known people. It wasn't meant to be all porn. That's just the best use case, obviously. 15,000 US federal scientists had their funding cut. And in response, some are retiring, some are switching careers, or they're getting poached by Europe and China. It's GoFundMe instead of national healthcare, OnlyFans instead of money for science. This is America, baby! Are you feeling great again, America? I sure hope so, because you're looking great! To be honest, scientists going to OnlyFans and turning to the goodwill of people in the middle of a cost of living crisis is actually maybe a better and more reliable plan than actually relying on the Trump administration to do things that are for the collective good and technically in their job description. Because unless Trump can make some money or fuck those rodents, he will not fund them properly. So you've got to make a choice. Are we going to let Trump grab him by the marmot, or are we going to cut old fat man in on some of that science money? The current cyclosporiasis outbreak, also known as the explosive diarrhea outbreak in the US, has given around 4,100 and counting, according to NPR, Americans the runs. It is a direct result of DOGE and Trump-era aggressive cuts. And sure, America has an obesity problem and most people can't afford Ozempic, but I don't think causing the few people in America willing to eat lettuce to projectile shit so hard that they get more propulsion than a SpaceX rocket is a low-cost effective weight solution that anyone is actually looking for. So realistically, this is just scientists making the first logical leap. Nobody could tell you who was the captain of the second mission to the moon except the second mission to the moon captain. And nobody will remember the second scientist to turn to OnlyFans, because science is all about being the first, baby! Boldly going where no man has gone before, which is actually not how I would describe OnlyFans normally. It is a place where many men have gone before, but no one has gone there to support science. Only sexy scientists. Moving on now, it's dental news. The election has been a topic of frantic and some might say wildly and recklessly speculative what-if-ism lately, as the media goes to town presenting the unreasonable speculative fiction that Pauline Hanson has a ghost of a chance of becoming the next PM. But this media blitz might have had some positive impact on the people of Australia in that they now actually have to appear to be doing things that will help the day-to-day paycheck-to-paycheck living undesirables that are the working class of Australia. Not rich enough to donate money in values that will influence policy, but numerous enough that our votes will turn the tide of an election. How do you balance those two urgent and important elements? Simple. You make promises. All kinds of promises. And it is on that note that Labor has agreed to create a roadmap towards universal access to dental services. Australians have been asking for dental in Medicare since 1974. And now, after a mere 50 years of calls to get this essential service covered by Medicare, it seems it only took the total internal destruction of the Liberal Party and the hypothetical rise of One Nation for Labor to feel that it was time to start making people happy again. Working class people, I mean, not lobbyists, of course. Or not business people, either. Those, they had that covered already, but the working class people... At this rate of rapid response to needs, the first people to benefit from this announcement may be the great-great-grandchildren of the people who are hearing it right now. It's less a health policy and more of an emergency ripcord, you know, in the event of political instability, break glass and get the injury covered by Medicare, you know, that kind of policy. After all, their regular go-to election strategy of what are you going to do? Vote for the coalition seemingly won't work this election. There might not be much of a coalition left by the time we get there. How do you scare children with the boogeyman when the boogeyman is publicly self-destructing? And the voters are so sick of your shenanigans that they will spite vote for the worst possible solution in order to break the two-party cycle. Assuming it is true, scaring Labor enough to consider the addition of dental to Medicare will be the only thing that Pauline Hanson has ever actually done for the working class. Prior to this, dental has occupied a fascinating place in the nation's healthcare. Whereas your heart, lungs, and brain are considered essential public infrastructure, your teeth are treated more like subwoofers and spinning wheels, you know, nice to have if you can afford them, but you'll be paying for them yourself, mister. And despite all this fear and rapid adjustment of plan, they still aren't actually doing it right. Because this is an exciting idea. Absolutely. But remember, the announcement isn't legislation. It isn't funding. It isn't even policy. It's a commitment to eventually produce the document that might one day become the thing that could later become the policy. And it's just saying that they'll do it as they, you know, dance around the idea of commitment in the way that only politicians can. Announcing their intention to make a plan to maybe do something later. Classic politician talk. A historic plan to begin planning a roadmap to a framework for the eventual possibility of the concept of affordable teeth. We got you, Australia. Receiving the government's strongest endorsement, a stirring, we'll look into it. But only if you elect us first. Rolling out their standard vote now, do nothing later approach to making things better. Setting us on a path of universal dental care in just several governments' time, but only if you keep voting for them. Showing their first commitment to advancing the cause of the working class for decades, really. A long road, even longer and more circuitous than Mario Kart's Rainbow Road, and just as easy to fall off. Seems to me it's a huge coincidence that the working class turning to One Nation happened right before they made the decision to start stealing the Greens' policies. The Greens have been campaigning for dental and Medicare for years, meaning the policy would likely sail through Parliament right now if Labor put a bill forward, which is even more reason to just fucking do it. Take the credit now before the election even starts up. Maybe they are simply waiting to steal more of the Greens' policies. Maybe I should start to expect Labor to start campaigning on taxing the 1%, getting rid of the coal mines, and properly funding JobSeeker to minimum wage levels. At least, oh wait, Oh, no. Sorry, I got a bit carried away there. That's a bit of a bridge too far for Labour. Sorry, they can't empower the poor that much. Who can they then rely on to take the jobs and force people out of work if they really had to? Yeah, you've got to balance nicely. You've got to keep the jobs and the workplaces happy by having a surplus army of unemployed in order to keep wages down. Simple. It's simple. Seems it is all part of Labour's attempt to defeat their true political opponent, the Greens, by slowly becoming them. You know, like the T-1000 killing John Connor's mum and then taking her form. Until then, Australians are encouraged to keep flossing until further notice. Moving on now, it is census news. The census has come and gone. Actually, by the time you listen to this, the census will definitely have come and gone. Though not everyone has finished it, and there is just an army of census workers in high-vis wandering the streets, desperately trying to reclaim some pieces of paper and not get bit by a dog, like a reverse mailman, I guess. And it has been a wild 5 years since the last census. The movers and the shakers at the ABS have decided that it's time to shake things up in Census Town. And the new census questions that you might have seen were added to the 2026 census. The wording of the question that records sex was changed to sex recorded at birth, and fresh topics on sexual orientation and gender were included into the census. Because apparently the census thought they weren't pissing enough people off and needed a hot injection of culture war crybabies, sending them death threats in order to get headlines to get people thinking about the census so they'll actually do it on census night. Which, I guess, is the only way that we can get free publicity these days. So good work, census. Or maybe they just, like, they sent out a bunch of media releases asking the media to help get the word out and nobody was really biting, so they came back with a vengeance. Oh, you won't write about the old census, will you? Well, now we're acknowledging sex recorded at birth. How do you feel about that? Which I think it's the way to go. This is, of course, great news. Demographers say collecting this data will give us a more comprehensive understanding of LGBTQIA communities across Australia, because we need a more sophisticated method of collecting data about them than just having the man in every polyamorous polycule insisting on telling you that he is poly without even being asked. Just in case you were down to clown. Because he's allowed to, you know. Did he mention he's in a polycule? Because he is. And yes, I know that saying polyamorous polycule is redundant. Not everyone is up to date with the lingo, Star Child. Some older people listening to this podcast need the help. All of the help that they can get. The survey also had non-gendered terminology used for households and family relationships. For example, terms like parent one and parent two were used besides terms like mother and father. Now, New Zealand, Canada, and the United Kingdom are amongst countries that have collected this data in the past, or as they are known in conservative circles, the Cuck Avengers. In a move practically designed to piss off One Nation voters for the first time, Australians are able to list up to 4 ancestries on their census form instead of the current limit of 2, allowing individuals with complex family backgrounds to better represent their heritage and people like Bob Catter to maybe take a chance to acknowledge your family's past. Don't get angry at the census, just write down Lebanese, it's okay. You can just really dig into how white you are if you're sort of insistent on bucking the system. You can be like, oh, I'm English and Irish and Scottish with a touch of Danish. You know, from the Vikings, when they were attempting to set up the world's first national history museum by going around pillaging a bunch of stuff and nothing else. Or maybe from when the Vikings set up the world's first non-consensual polycule. At least that's what I was taught in my anti-woke white is right school. It's a tough thing to let go of, you know. Though this will also act as a pissing contest between white supremacists to see just how white each individual member is. So think about it. They'll have to start forming a hierarchy
based on how long a particular country has actually been included under the blanket umbrella of white. So be careful, Irish white supremacists, because you will be on the chopping block first, because the Irish were not brought into the white fold until very recently. And at some point when they decide white isn't what white used to be, the Irish will probably be the first ones kicked out. Or maybe the Italians are. It's hard to say. It depends on which branch of supremacy you follow, I guess. But the expansion of census questions got us asking questions here at Weird News HQ. What other aspects of Australian life are missing from the census? And we here at the Bearer of Weird News have a series of questions that we think need answering. Have you ever described someone as just up the road when just up the road is actually over 300 kilometres away? I feel like that's an important thing for us to know. We need to know how many of these people are out there because nobody can find them. Which Australian value do you care about the most? Is it mateship, a fair go, negative gearing, franking credits? Which is it? Speak up now or forever hold your peace. How many corruption scandals should a politician survive before resigning? Is it 0, 1 to 5, or depends on which party we're talking about? Have you ever voted against your own economic interest because somebody said the word woke? How many Bunnings sausages have you consumed in the last financial year? That's also one that will probably get added to the citizenship test, I imagine. Approximately how many hours of your life have you spent on hold with Services Australia? These are details that we need, guys. How many climate disasters will you tolerate before voting differently? Is it 1 more, 5 more, or unlimited? Have you ever loudly complained about immigration while enjoying a kebab on the way home from the pub? How many streaming services are you paying for but not using? This one's a tough one because you may have forgotten that you're paying for them. Now, it wouldn't be a big public event without some conspiracy theories, and this year we have some doozies. There are the standards like door-to-door biometric and financial scams, of course, and intrusive data and surveillance, classic scamming, boring. But then there are some more fun ones. So there was this one that the census is secretly calculating how many times you've illegally used the self-checkout to put any other item as potatoes. The census isn't measuring population, it's measuring how many spare bedrooms can be converted into Airbnb listings. Or, failing that, they're asking how many people live in your house so landlords know how much more rent that they can actually charge you. They're determining whether yeah, nah, or nah, yeah is Australia's official slogan. Weigh in, which one do you think it is? They're determining if we need to upgrade from no worries to some worries, and they don't need the census to spy on you. The census is checking whether the spyware got it right before we invest in AI and more spyware. Like, is Palantir doing a good job? Or is Palantir failing? Like, this is the only way that we can really know before we fully integrate Palantir to run the entire country. And that, my friends, is the end of the podcast, or the main podcast at least. I do have a bonus story for you, some more animal news, some gene editing news. It's a fun story, so if you want to check that one out, do head over to the Patreon and check out the bonus stories there. If you've enjoyed this, or if you think you know somebody who would enjoy this type of material, do send them my way, share the links, share anything you might find online. Otherwise, just come out to one of the live shows. Let me know that you listen to the podcast. It's always nice to meet people who are out there. Thank you so much for spending your time with me, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.